Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Welcome to the Ethics Experts. This is our first properly filmed in studio episode. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about you and kind of how we got reconnected and stuff like that.
Okay, sure. I'm a shrink. I have a practice here in Charlotte, and I see individuals and families and couples. I specialize in anxiety disorders, mood disorders, mindfulness, effective communication, all that. And I've also ventured out into the corporate world, I guess you could say, which has been a big learning curve for me. But in terms of helping corporations, HR, and different departments kind of work on these skills,
yeah,
and kind of just, you know, gaining more personal or self-awareness, and how, we all know about communication and that we need to be effective with it, but kind of looking at these types of blanket arenas or statements and looking at it from a psychological perspective.
Oh, cool.
And so that's kind of what I've been venturing into recently.
So you talked about like the learning curve getting into the corporate world. What has that been like?
It's been interesting. I mean, I think for me, like, I was trained in the helping profession, and so for me, in terms of kind of the networking, the selling, the marketing, that's all been new.
Got it.
So it's definitely a learning curve there, but it's been great. I mean, just the relationships that I've been able to start to build has been exciting, because my field can be quite isolating. So it's been neat to just kind of broaden and have some peers.
To get out of the room, right?
Right.
With the couch or whatever.
Yeah.
You need to help that.
Yeah.
So we kind of reconnected because I saw an HR post that you put out, and I was like, man, this would be perfect for the ethics experts, because, you know, we're trying to elevate ethics professionals, compliance professionals, and HR professionals with some tactics and techniques to, like, be that strategic lever. So tell us a little bit about, like, what you would do if you went into an organization.
Sure. I think something that I'm seeing is, you know, we're fast-paced. Our society is incredibly fast-paced. And I think it's really hard for us to really understand how much we are stimulated throughout the day, whether it's with our devices, whether it's just multitasking. We're incredibly stimulated. And I think stress, you know, is on the rise. We're going to experience stress, but I think just we're not aware of how to manage it, or when we are stressed even. So I think a lot of times it's, you know, I'm not anti-technology by any means, but I think sometimes just being aware of how we are connecting with people that way, and that sometimes we forget how we're really wired as humans, and that we need these nonverbal, we're so wired to pick up nonverbal, you know, communication texts, and 98% of it is. And so a lot of times we're missing the boat with that. We're not, you know, feeling that energy exchange, if you will.
Right.
And I think that's a big part of it.
I was talking to a friend of mine who, he was just talking about this funny dichotomy he had with his best friend, because he went to LA, and he was like, that's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of everything, the overload. And he went to like Alaska. His buddy went to Alaska, and he just kind of lived in the woods, and he was very, kind of living in solitude and stuff. And they got back together, and my friend said, man, he's just so present.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just has this presence, mm-hmm. you know? Not that he's taking up the whole room, but like, he's there with you.
Yeah.
And I think, to your point, like, we're probably not built for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's probably a lot of behaviors that end up sort of coming out of it, because we're just like trying to adapt to like the buzzing thing in your phone all the time. And like, did somebody like me on Twitter? And, you know, like all that stuff in the back of your mind,
yes,
that are all distractions from that interaction that we're actually built for.
Right. And then we're missing the boat a lot in just, you know, what seem like simplistic situations. We're missing help. We're missing out on that.
Yeah.
You know, just information exchange, that energy exchange, all of it. And that, again, that's what we're kind of wired for. So it's interesting how we may think we're getting a lot done, and we might be, but in terms of here, how many people are liking it, you know, multitasking, all these things, but at the end of the day, sometimes it's interesting how you don't necessarily feel fulfilled.
Yeah, you don't feel fulfilled, and then you also, it's almost like there's no room for, like, those authentic connections,
mm-hmm.
which
yeah.
is, like, so counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's like that was obviously not the intent when notifications were invented on cell phones or something, right? Like,
yeah.
there's all these like unintended consequences that, you know, you see them in your own family, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you bring your phone to the dinner table or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all these things that then you need to do to sort of counteract our tendency to want to keep that phone with us or keep it next to the bed or mm-hmm. be in bed with your spouse, both on your phones.
Yeah. Something.
It's just very, it's infiltrated everything.
Right. And I think too, you think about like the macro level of an organizational or an organizational culture.
Yeah.
And really, you know, we talk about it being, you know, from the top and trickling down, which is absolutely true, but also just giving people that personal power of like, you're a contributor to culture and how much
right.
you want to soak up and how much you want to give. And I think that's kind of what ties into more of that personal accountability, and that really gets jump started, which is personal and self-awareness, which I think we're sometimes, you know, it's not emphasized.
No, it's not emphasized. That's an interesting point, right? Because again, it's like these light bulbs end up getting shut off, mm-hmm. and then those connections aren't there, mm-hmm. and then we end up just sort of turning into takers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the culture, to your point, I mean, what is the culture? It's just a collection of a bunch of people and the kind of the sum average of all their values and how they live and the beliefs and things like that. So if all those things from a micro basis or from like a bottom up perspective, each one of those individuals is being affected kind of in the same way by this tech overload or this like lack of mindfulness or lack of, you know, presence or whatever,
mm-hmm.
of course it's going to your point, of course it's going to like start to infiltrate the culture.
Yeah.
So what is, you know, what could we as leaders or people who are in the ethics, you know, business or in the compliance business or in the HR, who are the kind of overseers at some level, whether they realize it or not, of the culture, or at least the ones who are sort of most equipped to actually put things into practice to affect it,
mm-hmm.
Which is actually kind of changing hearts and minds, what kind of things could they be doing on this particular element?
Right. So I think a lot of it too, if you think of the word capacity, and what I mean by that is, I mean, you know as well as I do, like we only have a certain amount to give in a day. Like I know for me, it's like when I transition a lot from work to home, I have to be pretty mindful, like when I'm talking to my kids or when I'm doing, because I'm running out. My capacity is getting lower.
Got it.
Right? And
like
so
your gas tank's getting lower.
Yeah, my gas tank's getting lower. And so being aware of that, I think as HR professionals or any type of professional, to understand that it, you know, it goes a long way when you make that effort to connect, whether that's asking about a project you're working on, whether that's asking a personal, how's your family, how, what's going on, being present with that person, showing the eye contact, showing the nonverbals and not multitasking. You know as well as I do, you can tell when someone is actually there with you,
right,
and when someone is not. And I think people then, you know, again, we create connectedness. And so
right.
when you feel that, it can be contagious in a good way. And so I think just, you know, people that are in leadership positions or HR professionals who are dealing with people's complaints, people's, you know, needs, people's wants, and it's a very taxing job. You have to be a good listener, but you also have to be mindful of like, I'm burnt out and I need to do something to recharge myself so that
right.
I can be present. And if not, I need to look at how I'm taking care of myself. Is sleep a priority? Am I, you know, just taking care of my basic needs so that I can show up there for other people?
Yeah, because it is all connected, right?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this question. We're talking about kind of mindfulness and presence, right? Like there's some kind of hard skills in this area, which might be like keeping your phone over here, actually making the eye contact and actually asking about this thing that I heard about.
Right.
But that's not automatically authenticity. So talk a little bit about that. Because I think the connection points are on authenticity. It's not through that sort of check the box, go through the motions thing.
Yes, yeah, because we can tell. We're, you know,
you
we're aware
like,
of it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think too, and I hope this answers your point, but I think something that, you know, in the hustle and bustle of everything, something that I try to live by and try to, you know, kind of, it's a simple way to think about it, is think about having bookends for yourself during the day. And what I mean by that is something in the morning that you're deliberate with and that can be just yours for your beginning bookend.
Okay.
And something at the end of the day that you close your day. And knowing that the middle can be chaotic all over the place, you don't have much control. And as humans, let's face it, we like control, we don't have much of it.
Right.
So having something where you can be authentic and present with yourself. And that doesn't
okay.
have to be full-blown meditation if that's not your thing. That doesn't have to be getting up at 5:30 and hitting the gym. It doesn't have to be these things. So for example, if you're a coffee lover, and that's just something that you do anyway, I would challenge you maybe in the beginning of the day, don't multitask when you're doing your coffee.
Gotcha.
So really be present and go through your five senses with your coffee and everything it takes to make it. And what does it smell like? What do you feel like? What do you taste? What are you hearing? What are you being there and kind of going through those five senses and being present with that ritual that you may already have in place. And when you're drinking your coffee, showing up for it, you know,
yeah.
And not, you know, doing this, checking your phone, doing it. It may take you 5 minutes, it may take you 10, but that could be a really good bookend that really doesn't take that much effort and it's already something that you like to do.
Yeah, and it kind of, it's almost like a, I don't know, this is the wrong word, it's like a little mini vacation or something. Like you're literally unplugging from the world and you're just in that moment with that thing. Again, yeah. It can be prayer, meditation, going to the gym, or it can be something as simple as what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe that's kind of leading into some of the mindfulness stuff. Like, like you could be at the gym and thinking about all the stuff that you have to do for the day,
right?
Which, you know, that's not really like a good bookend in your in your kind of framework right here.
Yes.
So like, again, like, I don't know, like that's a hard thing to, mindfulness is not an easy thing.
It's a hard thing. And so I think too, finding something that's not going to cause stress or cause like, you know, negative self-talk, like, why can't I do this? So it can be simple, like something I tell my clients a lot too, is the five senses is a huge one. So that might be something that you even do in the shower, and because that's a good place. You're, you know, feeling the water, you're smelling things, you're good, and just scanning through, and it's so simplistic. You almost go back to like the mind of a toddler, right?
Yeah.
And you're there, you're present with just that. And it may give you a break for 30 seconds. You may get better at it. But even that practice of just being clear-headed and moving into that part of your brain gives you that presence and that authenticity with you.
Yeah.
So that when you're practicing that, so when you are, like, for example, when I'm here with you, I don't want my mind to be thinking about what I'm doing at 2:30.
Totally.
So I'm not, and you'll sense that, and I won't be focused, you know, and there's other things that can come into play. There's other, you know, factors, anxiety, other things we make. That's a different topic. But I think practicing that presence and awareness with you, and that can be, you know, structured in the terms of the bookend analogy, but that helps when you're with other people and at work.
Yeah, it's almost like we have to, man, there's so much, you're like saying so much great stuff here. Let me jump to this, like, mindfulness is like a new word, it feels like.
Yeah, and a lot of people are turned off by it. And to be honest with you, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, yeah.
And right. It feels like, oh, is it this touchy-feely thing? But it's like we had to create a new word,
yeah.
Because like we're in this new age of recorded history where there's like, I don't know, when have people in recorded history been as bombarded as we are with just stimulus?
Yeah,
just...
that's right. No, you're right. I think too, if you just want to break it down, what mindfulness is, it's also just showing up and paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's... so really, if you really want to, you know, simplify it, it's... it doesn't, again, have to mean, you know, sitting in your house or sitting wherever in yoga studio and full-blown meditating for an hour. It doesn't, that's, you know, a form of it, but it also can mean just, again, showing up, whether
right.
It's even a five-second reset where you're like, okay, I'm going to do a quick scan of my body and just kind of, do I feel cold? Do I feel hot? What do I hear? What do I see? I mean, that's being mindful. You're showing up and being present, even if it's for a few seconds.
Yeah, and I think the more I've sort of learned, I think probably when I first heard it, I was like, this seems like kind of touchy-feely and silly, but like
right.
As I've gotten into it and learned about it, I'm like, okay, well, there's obviously something here because we're all experiencing this lack of connectivity and this lack of authenticity and the lack of sort of like real relationships, and it's like trickling out into everything,
yeah.
You know? This is like statistically the most safe time for kids ever, but like think of how... like when we were kids, we were out and playing,
yeah,
blah, blah,
yeah,
and I'll
yeah.
see them for dinner. And like so many moms and dads are not comfortable with their kids doing that because of all the fear and all this other stuff.
Right.
So then there's like lack of that kind of connection that kids are having now. And they're also getting bombarded at this young age with all this stimulus and all this stuff. Like, what is that going to look like in 30 years? If we don't start to counteract it, because there's a lot going on this side of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to do things to your point, be intentional, be mindful to make sure that we don't sort of degrade into this around this crazy
yeah.
thing, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I see so many like teens, I mean, I see just in my practice too, that, you know, aren't, and not saying you have to be involved in everything under the sun, but there's not even one thing that they are involved in kind of externally, whether it's a team, a group, a, you know, band, whatever it may be. But they are craving that connectedness and trying to get it desperately through their social media accounts, through this
right.
and that, and that constant fueling of like, I need that validation, I need that validation, I need that connectedness. It's just counterproductive.
It is counterproductive, and it ends up being like false connections.
Right.
you know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that like you can't meet people on social media.
No,
like I've met people yeah. and, but the people that I've met, I've had actual connections with, right? It's yeah. not just like a like, and then that's it. Right.
Right.
But when that sort of becomes a stand in mm-hmm. for actual connectedness,
yeah,
I just, it's kind of a scary path that like we as a society are sort of going down.
Right.
Yeah, it's crazy. So just to get back to the corporate piece of it, mm-hmm. like what kind of stuff have you seen companies be successful, you know, in doing to combat this like this inauthenticity thing? And do you think it's always been like a problem, like lack of connectedness or lack of sort of authentic relationships? Has that always, do you think, at some level been a problem in sort of groups of people, or do you feel like it's like sort of worse now?
I think it's definitely morphing. I think that, you know, there's always been, you know, just everybody has different personalities and different experiences sure. and different ways of communicating and listening, which, you know, that makes the world exciting.
Right.
But I do see that there's just a lot more competition now.
For attention.
Yeah. And, or just that, you know, we do have other things. We're so busy. We have so many roles. We have right. so many things going on that it is hard for us to sit down and really be present with what we're doing in that moment. And so I think a big thing that I've seen just with when I've been working with, you know, leaders or some people in companies that are influencers is, you know, really, well, and necessarily I'm thinking HR folks too that are maybe, you know, I talked to some woman and she's like, I'm just constantly bombarded.
Totally.
Like, just constantly with issues and issues and issues. And then you kind of go into, how do I be authentic with that? How do I not wear out
right.
and burn out, but still like do my job and still have me?
And still be a leader and not freak out ever or something.
Yes. And so I think
it's a real thing.
It is. And yeah. I think a big part of that is too, just going back into what your boundaries are and how you're setting those.
Got it.
And I think what I mean by that too is, you know, when I spoke with some HR folks a few months ago at the conference, I was kind of saying, you know, it is okay to, you know, schedule and make it known to people that you're willing and you're open to speaking with them, but that it can't just be like, handy this.
Yes.
Because some of the most authentic, genuine, you know, empathetic people I know have really good boundaries.
Interesting.
They are able to assess, like, you know what, I would love to hear about that, but I'm in the middle of this and I need to finish this up.
Yeah.
But let's have some time where we can talk. If someone says that to you, you know that you're important enough where they're not just gonna be like, yeah, that's great.
Right. So that's something I struggle with big time because like I love the idea of like an open door. Right.
Yeah.
I want anyone, like I view myself as the servant of mm-hmm. my team and I wanna be there for everybody, right? And so I love the sort of that sort of metaphorical picture of, hey, if there's an open door literally and figuratively, and like if you need something, come to me.
Yeah.
But to that bombardment thing, like mm-hmm. I'm just to be totally transparent yeah. and like honest about it, there are times where like I'm getting totally bombarded and somebody's coming with some like something that they really need mm-hmm. and like it ends up being like a fake open door then because I'm not there with them because I'm blah, blah,
right,
you know.
Right.
But to your point, I haven't obviously established those boundaries
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big
and
one.
And so I think that's a big one, especially for anybody, not just
yeah.
HR folks, but I mean, I didn't have to do it with my kids a lot where it's like, I'm doing
go
something,
to your
room. I'm focused.
Yeah.
Yes. but it's like, you know, my daughter will start talking to me about something and sometimes I have to set that, you know, sweetie, I really want to hear that. I want to listen to that, but I know I'm not going to be able to fully focus on you. So give me like 5 minutes and I'm all yours. And
yeah.
that right there is, I mean,
because maybe
I don't practice
about
that all.
Yeah, yes. No, I'm kidding.
It's really yeah. But that helps me because
yeah.
I know how it is just even as a mom or even as a therapist or even as a friend. If I'm not there,
well, you can feel it.
You can feel
yeah.
it. They can feel it, and you're stressed. And then it's like you're trying to put in the plot. It just doesn't work.
And it gets down to this thing that I'll call leakage, or just like evaporation, or whatever you want to call it. But there's leakage in that interaction, and it's not that authentic, real interaction. You're spending that time. You're talking,
yeah.
but you're not getting everything out of it. Or like you were talking, you know, 98% is this nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a lot of nonverbal cues when you're looking at your phone. Again, when I'm saying you, I'm saying me.
Right.
Like this is stuff I do. Okay. So
we're all guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting point, you know, and I just want to kind of reiterate it. Some of the most empathetic and most connected type of people that you've met or know have really sort of strong or well-defined boundaries. And it's, you know, again, it's a big thing to, like, I mean, for me at least, to like give myself permission for and know that it's not actually, it's not like in conflict with the picture of an open door or something.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I think sometimes we, you know, equate like something, someone that's open and all that is that they're kind, they're available, they're all these things, but people that are like that sometimes, you know, we burn out and we just, we kind of lose ourselves in the shuffle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it ends up just being a caricature or like a hollow version of this thing, this ideal that is not, it's not being achieved.
Yeah.
So what sort of things would you tell folks to do? Have office hours?
I think it's, you know, it really depends on you, how you work and where you work. But I think it's just really the first step is thinking about your stress level, thinking about how much you are able to focus when you're even engaging in a, hey, how was your weekend? Like, if you're like, I can't really focus on any of that. My mind is constantly going in 50 million other directions. That's a pretty good indication that, you know, you need to just really reassess your boundaries. Like, okay, am I doing something for me in the morning? Am I giving myself that full, you know, so I am recharged and do have the capacity during the day? Or am I, you know, not sleeping at all and my mind is constantly going? And am I just kind of running all the time?
Right.
And those are some things I think to start just that level of self-awareness. Something I use all the time is the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this is, he's a psychologist, but the skinny of it is that he basically, the first layer is, you know, you need to, your food, your shelter, your health, all those things need to be in check before you can move yourself up the ladder.
Sure.
You know, eventually getting to like this, just, you know, you're reaching these levels of high abstract thoughts and all that. It's, you know, you go up. So basically, if you think about that, how are you going to achieve at a level that you might want to be at and influence others by, if you're not even, you know, putting your sleep as a correct, drinking your water, you know, being mindful of what you're putting into your body, that's a pretty high expectation to make, you know.
Is it even possible?
For a minute, you can, you know, you can stay it for a while, you can, but it can't
be sustainable.
And that's when we get sick stress, which develops into anxiety, which develops other things, and so then we're just running ragged. And we're not healthy. We're not happy.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like all the stuff we're talking about, like how do we translate that from yourself to the little group of people that you influence, whether it's your home life and your work. I mean, I kind of think it's all one life, but the people that you touch, and how do you then translate that into like the larger group that you're sort of a part of, whether that's your team, it's your culture at work, or you know, move it out even bigger to our society and then to our world.
Yeah.
Like, how does it start? It starts with maybe ourselves, or what? What do you think?
I think it does. I mean, I really do, and I think it starts with ourselves. It starts with the many, you know, not even many, but just the individual interactions, how we are contributing to our team, how we, if we feel accepted, if are we accepting of others, and if it's, and assessing too, if it's like, wow, this is not working for me at all. Do I need to make a change? Do I need to make a shift? Do I need to talk to someone about that? Is this culture, is this something where, you know, I do feel like I could fit into a certain degree but still be genuine to myself? Or, you know, just, again, just that level of self-awareness.
Right.
Because I do think, as you know, little interactions, they impact us. You know, even those interactions, if you're checking out at the grocery and someone's like, just in a bad mood, and that energy is exchanged to you. Now, some of us are able to brush it off better than others.
Right.
But, I mean, we carry that stuff, and we carry our stress, and it impacts, you know, the things we touch throughout the day.
Yeah, there's, we read about this study, or we, in one of our huddles, we had a, we were talking about this, like, it's like this social contagion, and it's, like, more contagious than, like, sneezing, right? And we don't, you know, if somebody had the example is kind of gross, but if somebody had a bunch of like used Kleenex on their desk, you'd be like, can you get that out of here? Like somebody's going to get sick.
Yeah.
But we let people on our team who are clearly hurting or clearly have bad attitudes or something, we let that kind of sit because, well, we can't affect it or we can't touch it. But that seeps out into everybody around us. And like, we do it ourselves, to your point. If we're not meeting those sort of foundational needs, those start trickling into these other things. You're walking around with the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you make somebody feel small unintentionally or maybe intentionally because you were made to feel small at the gas station or by your parents or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just starts to freaking infect everything.
Yeah.
And it's, I think to your point, it does start with that sort of mindfulness thing. Mm-hmm. Let's jump to like active listening, because that's something that sort of there's some hard skills or hard things in there. Not I'm not saying difficult. I'm saying that easy to kind of grab onto and easy to, I think, enact. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about like the importance of it, or you know, where you think people fall short. And I feel like a lot of the stuff we're talking about is all kind of related.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I feel like that's something that we really fall short in. Like, I see it all the time in sales presentations, right? Like, people are always hitting us up for, hey, buy this offer. Hey, that, you know, it's just like, you're just talking that. You're not even, like, I don't even care about the five things you just said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about that, how you think people fall short in it and what we can do to fix it.
Yeah, so I think the big thing, you know, initially is to try to make some type of connection. So again, whether that's a, like, you know, like, I mean, with us, we have connections of like, hey, we grew up in the same place,
right.
Or hey, you know, and, you know, you do a really good job, I think, of, you know, asking me questions about, what are you up to? Tell me about this, you know, and immediately I'm like, okay, he, you know, wants me to share a little bit.
Right.
He wants to build that that connection. So that lets me kind of, whether I have any social anxiety, whether I have anything going on, that kind of helps me relax a little bit and open up and want to reciprocate. So
right.
I think a big thing, if you look at just nonverbals, it's definitely, you know, putting other things away.
Okay.
You know, so putting things away, you know, making that eye contact, your body language speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and think about that. If you're like, what does that mean? And just observe people and how they speak. You know, a lot of people speak with their hands, and people speak with their eyes. It's not just verbal. And so if you find yourself too, where you're in a conversation and you're like, I just can't focus. I mean, my mind is everywhere. That's again, where you can kind of go back to basics and scan your five senses. What am I hearing? The tone of their voice. Is
right.
it soothing? Is it, what reaction I have to that? What am I seeing? You're not comprehending
gotcha.
What they're saying, but go back and you're just like, where am I right now? And what am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
And every conversation we're in is not incredibly stimulating. You know, some of them you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But you have to also look at what's the focus here, what's the end game. And some
and also
games,
how does this fit in the big picture
right.
and the big story?
That's right. So
right.
sometimes when you ask someone a question about their weekend and they go into something where you're like, I have no
I'm tapping out.
That.
Just start tapping
I have no
out.
Interest
right.
in that. think about the end game and like, you know what? I want to build a connection with this person because down the road I want them to know that I am approachable or that I am willing to
yeah.
listen.
Yeah. Or how about just to be kind? I mean, sometimes
yeah.
somebody just starts
yeah.
talking and it's because like maybe they don't have anybody to talk to.
That's right.
And maybe they just need an ear for a minute and you know,
yeah.
you can give somebody a minute without checking your phone.
Right.
You know, again, I'm talking to myself.
No, you're right. And too, just a flag on that note with that type of listening, you know, a lot of people ask me like, how do you, you know, I need some advice or do you give advice? And I'm thinking, I don't give advice, number one, because who the hell am I to do that?
Right.
Right. I think what I try to do and hope that I do is create an environment where people are able to kind of process, and I kind of sometimes will guide them,
mm-hmm.
but they figure it out.
They kind of know the answer usually anyways.
So it's not a like, oh, well, this is what you should do. Think about that too from an HR perspective or even a leadership perspective. You're there to support, not necessarily solve.
Yeah, these are, you're not holding reins on people
right.
pulling their head in this different direction, to your
right.
point. I mean, that's obviously an extreme sort of
mm-hmm.
caricature of what we're talking about, but
mm-hmm.
I think many times in leadership, we feel like that's what we have to do. Here's the answer.
Here's the answer.
Yeah.
And I think I've seen that too. And then if you think about it, you give that answer, and if it's not executed correctly, or if it's, you know, just kind of brushed aside, you're vested. So you have more to worry about. You're like,
good
oh,
point.
That was... So if you're there, and you may know the answer 9 times out of 10, but questions like, well, you know, tell me more about that. Well, tell me about your decision-making process
mm-hmm.
with that. What do you feel like your options are with that?
Right.
They're still owning it. You may have, you know, you're going to help them with that. Now, there may be some things that are cut and dry, but overall,
yeah.
you want them to own it, and you're supporting and you're facilitating that learning so that they get that confidence.
Well, they actually learn it then, right? Like if you're helping someone through it, then like whatever, I don't know how the brain works, but some kind of connection is being made in their own mind. Like they're trudging that path versus you just sort of jumping them to the end.
Right.
Then they're actually going to your point, own it the whole way. It's theirs the whole way forward past the goal line, not you just grabbing the ball and running with it.
Yeah.
So that's a hard one for me, not to make this about me, but I just want this to be like a real conversation.
Yeah,
and like, I think it's rooted maybe in impatience, which is probably rooted in a like lack of like mindfulness or presence in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like what's the rush?
Yeah, and then we always try to do like step 15 before I even identify what step one is.
Totally.
I'm very guilty of that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, this, and it's like, oh, wait, but what do I need to do right now?
Right.
And then that, if you start there, as you know, it's like you alleviate so much stress. You're like, this is my thing I have to do now. Before I can do that, I'm not thinking about here. I got to do this before
right.
I can do that.
So, and that kind of speaks to this thing I've been kind of thinking about. I probably read it somewhere. And it's like, if you're kind of thinking, if you're like living in the past, that's like kind of maybe rooted in regret. I'm not talking about like having a great memory or thinking about a great vacation or a great time with your kids from last weekend or something. I'm talking about like, if your mind is kind of in the past a lot, it's kind of like, it feels like it's kind of rooted in regret. And then if your mind is really rooted in your, like focusing so much in like the future, it's kind of rooted in some kind of like anxiety. And like neither of these things can you change, right? Like tomorrow's gonna worry about itself. The past is already done, it's already written. So like all that actually leaves from like a rash, if you wanna get rational about it, is just being in this exact moment, which is constantly falling away, right? Like it's constantly, so you have to like, if you can just live in the now then,
right.
Then it's easier to be mindful. It frees you of these other like shackles of sort of regret or anxiety. And to your point, you can just focus on, okay, well, what's the next thing I have to do? Okay, I have to move this foot forward and take that first step. And then the next things are going to happen.
That's right. Because you nailed it. Anxiety is future thinking or past thinking.
Yeah. And why do you think people have anxiety about past thinking? Like talk to me about that.
We learn so much through experience. We learn by, you know, just our foundational piece of how our parents reacted to things or our caregivers reacted to things, how, you know, we soak up all that as kids, you know, that's how we learn. That's how our foundation is. So, you know, it's that very nature nurture, you know, component. But I think a lot of it is we learn through experience. So if something traumatic happened, you know, even as traumatic as repetitively feeling left out on the playground, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, huge thing. We are creating almost these portals of thought, like we're creating associations with things. And if those are not disrupted, they become highly ingrained in us.
Yeah. There's a video that I just made that's about kind of this thing where if you're in battle, you need armor, right? You have to have that because people are swinging axes at you and all this other stuff. But like, if you're trying to swim across a lake, that armor is weighing you down.
Yeah.
You don't need that armor. But like, we develop all this armor when we're kids because we get picked on or something traumatic happens or whatever. And to your point, it like turns into a carapace that grows with us. And like, it's very difficult to shed, but it's like, it doesn't serve us anymore. It's a very difficult thing, I think, to like let go of because, you know, maybe it's these portals of thought are just so, I mean, they're actual portals. They're there. I don't know. So how do we do that? You think it's just you have to look at it and say, do I need this anymore?
Well, I think a lot of it too is just really taking the time to be self-aware about like how maybe did this develop? And sometimes we don't know. It's not that black and white, but how maybe did this get created? How is it serving me now? Why do I go there? You know, how can I change my mindset when I'm introduced to similar experiences? You know, just I guess acknowledging too, like when you're like, yeah, I'm gonna have a conversation with someone, and immediately your mind goes to, you're probably thinking this about me.
Yes, just call this negative
self-talk. I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, being aware of like, man, yeah, I do that, and that is just not setting me up in a good space. Just,
totally.
You know, one conversation from the next. So being aware of that and doing some work to change that, and of course, you know, if you're like, I don't know how to do that, therapy's a good way.
Yeah.
But I think also it is just really identifying patterns is the big one. Patterns within yourself. You're like, yeah, I do this, and it serves me well in this way, but in this way, it just doesn't, and I need to figure out some ways how to make a new portal of thought.
Yeah, and I think it becomes hard to have authentic connections when you're wearing that armor. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't.
Yep.
But, you know, it's, I think you don't have that armor on all the time. I mean, to the extent that you have some authentic relationship somewhere, mm-hmm. that armor must be dropped at some point.
Yeah.
So I think maybe the challenge is to say, okay, well, how do I get this kind of feeling that I have with my sister or with my brother, where I don't have that negative self-talk going in my head all the time? How do I get that out of this area into sort of my regular day-to-day world? How do I shed that? And how do I, you know, because I don't think anybody loves the fake you.
No.
Any love you have is to the real you, and any quote-unquote love that you have that is to the fake you is fake love.
Right.
Like, it's not, there's nothing actually there. It's a fake relationship or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so many of those. I mean, it's probably most relationships are that way, which is crazy.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm too, it kind of, you know, a lot of people may think like I'm crazy when I say this, but I really do think that people are doing the best they can, like, most of the time.
Totally.
And I know some people are like, no, people, you know, they slack off, they don't do this, they don't have their stuff in on time, they don't do this, or they don't communicate. But if you think about it, everybody's foundation is different.
Yeah,
right?
And also that we're talking about one facet of the shape.
That's right.
And it's a three-dimensional, multifaceted shape of who a person is.
That's right. And if people come across as, you know, angry all the time, or they don't want to do this, or they don't want to be a team player, is that going to affect the business? Absolutely. And not that you just, you know, give them kind of every excuse, or just say, oh, well, they're dealing with that. But it's something too to look at a different lens and say, they probably are dealing with some things, whether it's internally that they've dealt with forever, that helps them, you know, does not help them in social situations. There's that negative self-talk, there's other things going on. So they're really probably producing at a level that they have the capacity.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's fighting the battle of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yep.
I don't think anybody's on their deathbed and they're like, that was easy.
Yeah.
You know, like, life is hard for freaking everybody.
Right. And up here, the talk is just the hardest thing. Because, you know, people are so self-centered, so people think about, oh, everyone thinks this, and a lot of times it's like, nobody
cares
that much about you.
You're thinking about
them. Thinking about them.
And that's actually a super freeing thing.
It is.
Like, when you can realize that, like, that is so freeing, because it's like, okay, well then, the pressure's off, and all this self-talk that I'm having is
right. Basically,
it's without any, like, legitimate basis.
Yeah, I remember my grandma, I always remember this, I think it was in middle school, Carmel,
yeah.
And I remember, you know, I came home and my grandma was visiting, and I said, you know, I think these girls are talking about me, and it's kind of just, I don't know what to do about it, and they're just talking about me, I'm not sure what they're saying, but I can tell, and I think, you know, it was stressing me out.
Totally.
As a 7th grader, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I remember her looking at me dead and I said, yeah, what people say about you is none of your business.
Wow.
And I
gave me kind of chills.
Yeah, and I said, yeah, it is. They're talking about me, and it's like, I, you know, really fought back. And she goes, it's none of your business. So if they're talking to you, which, you know, they have some ownership, and if something's bugging them, that they need to address it with you, or, you know, you have the option of maybe asking them. But what people say about you is none of your business, and you should not concern yourself
that
way.
I love that.
And that can help too, with just, you know, I mean, we're kids really as adults in the sense of there's
totally.
Not this concept and they're thinking that. And it's almost like, do you feed into that? Do you play on that? Do you crave that? Or are you one of those people that's just like, well, what are you going to do about it? What are your options? You know, and do you perpetuate it, or do you try to stop it?
Yeah. And think of how much, so I want to talk about, like, first impressions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think of how much, I'd love you to kind of weigh in on, like, how much of that, you know, a lot of us haven't had that. I just heard that for the first time, and that's, like, super empowering.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of that ends up, you know, people who haven't heard that, how much of that ends up influencing that first impression, and how much of the judgment that people fear do you feel like they're creating themselves?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think that that's a huge one, and there's just so much anxiety associated with that
right.
in general. But I think first impressions are huge. But if you think about it, a lot of times we're so in our heads during first impressions. But when you walk away knowing that someone heard you, even if you talked about your dog or whatever and you made that connection, you walk away feeling like, yeah, that was good.
And there's like an acceptance
exchange
or something.
That's right. And I talk, a lot of people say, I'm an introvert. I don't want to talk. I don't know what to say. I don't want to go on to people. And a lot of times, you know, that's the type of person I'll say, you can do so much communication by not using your words. And so if you are one of those people that's like, I don't want to necessarily go up and be like, hey, how was your weekend and all this. The thing though that you can do to still be part of that positive culture and that build connectedness and all that is to show up to that conversation. And how you do that is with your eye contact, with your nonverbals, with that, you know, oh, that's those little inserts are like, oh my gosh, that's cool. Or
right.
The laugh. And sometimes it's like, yeah, but I'm not genuine with that. But that's one of those things that I would preach. Fake it till you make it.
Totally.
You need to get better at that and showing up, but not necessarily with like, oh, I don't have a story to tell about my weekend.
And it's, you know, I don't know if it's our culture or what, but, you know, so I'm kind of on this tip about like diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, diversity where, you know, giving inclusivity for women or people of different races or different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you don't spend enough time, I don't think, talking about like diversity of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, certain personalities sort of like do well in business or do well in the working world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not enough room, I think, sort of cut out for folks who have different personalities. Like, you know,
yeah.
Like to your point, like I think like a lot of introverts feel like, oh, well, I should be extroverted. And, like you shouldn't be anything other than
right.
You are. You
yeah.
know, you know what I'm saying? But like
yeah.
some of the things that you're talking
mm-hmm.
about are ways to kind of bridge that gap and not feel like, well, I don't have anything to say. Well, fine. You don't have to say anything, but you can still be sort of in the mix.
Yeah.
But what could companies do around that thing? Because that's like the happy puppy thing, you know, like you go to the pound or whatever they call them now, it's not kill shelter. What is it? I'm kidding. Whatever, the rescue shelter.
Yeah.
Like you go there and the puppy comes up and you're like, oh, this puppy was made for me, you know? And like that puppy, you take it home and it won't, because it's the alpha. So it
yeah.
won't listen to you. It's
yeah.
eating on your carpet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's doing all that stuff. Like the best puppy is probably the more docile one, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like in our society, that same thing seems to happen, or in our economy, I'll say, the same thing seems to happen where the person who comes to the interview and they're, hey, I'm, you know, they're really out there and they're, you know, they seem to get the jobs. I'm saying from an introvert's perspective.
Sure, sure.
They feel like, okay, and then the introvert feels like, okay, well, I need to sort of emulate that thing.
Right.
And then it ends up coming across, they hate it, and it ends up coming across as inauthentic. And then the person on the other side is like, what's going on here? This feels weird.
Yes.
Like, what can we do to help those folks who have maybe lived their whole lives that way?
Yeah. Well, I think that big piece is knowing that you are communicating a lot just with your body and your nonverbals and how you are coming across as a listener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just being authentic with that piece. And like the other piece of that is if you are with someone who is extroverted or people love to talk about themselves. So just having those questions that you ask, like, oh, tell me more about that.
Right.
And that's kind of interesting. What do you mean? Those questions that keep people talking so
yeah.
that you can still be engaging and maybe throw in your, you know, your thoughts, but that keeps the conversation going.
Keeps the conversation going. That's a really great point. Wow. It keeps the conversation going. And then that person who gets their energy from talking,
they're fully fulfilled.
They're fully fulfilled.
Like, oh,
and then
great.
They're like, that guy's amazing. Or that girl's phenomenal, man.
I
She's awesome. And then like,
that's right.
Yeah. That's
so
a,
it's
that's
kind
a
of being
point.
Smart about and strategic about that kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kind of went to a lot of different places. This was really, really a fun conversation. Ethics and compliance professionals, as I talk about a lot, often get pigeonholed, right? So we've been talking about on an individual basis. We've been talking about how, you know, one human can better interact with another human. And that's really what all this ends up kind of boiling down to. But what can people in those functions that are maybe on average more introverted or on average higher conscientious or on average you know, in a role that perhaps in their organization has been downplayed or viewed as check the box, what sort of techniques do you think that they could do help burst out of this sort of glass box that they've been put in to start affecting the culture, because they're really the ones who are most kind of able to do that.
Yeah. I think too, like, again, I'm going to kind of go back to the baseline of just self-awareness and kind of understanding how you typically operate and maybe why. We're getting some help with the why, but then also setting some goals for yourself or some positive risks that you can take. And the key word, I think, is vulnerability.
Yes.
You know, and so being vulnerable in ways that don't compromise who you are, or again, create this huge amount of stress or anxiety. But the way you're going to progress is by taking risks. And if you look at it from even just a social standpoint, sometimes being vulnerable and saying, you know what, I am going to try to maybe go up to this person or insert myself in a situation where I probably am going to feel some anxiety or it's going to be different for me. But the thing I'm going to take away is how I responded and what I learned about myself. And just again,
That's my goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of strength in that vulnerability, and I'm trying to like lean into it more, and it feels so counterintuitive, but you know, you said something before where you're like, you know, we're just a bunch of like kids in like grown-ups' bodies or something, and like I moved around a lot, so I always had a lot of anxiety. I was the new kid all the time, and like if that's how everybody feels deep down, then let's just talk about it, like,
right.
Because then it ends up like lowering everybody's guard, and you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Then you. When once that guard is lower, then you can have that connection with people.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And I think too, not taking everything and internalizing everything and taking everything so personally.
Yeah.
There's a story that I used to say when I worked in some schools, and I just love this story. It's about like fish. So there's a group of fish, you know, they're in a pond and they're all swimming together. And then they had noticed this one fish, and he's kind of up near the surface and he's swimming sideways and not really going anywhere. And they all kind of, you know, he's different, what's going on. And they're a little fearful, and they just kind of keep going. And they see this again, you know, a few minutes later, and they just kind of keep going. And what happened was that fish had actually been caught. So he had a hook in his mouth. So he was swimming sideways and desperately trying to work with what he had. He's doing the best that he can. And the symbolism of that story, I think, is sometimes we don't know what people's hooks are.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on. And sometimes we're fearful of it, or we want to stay away, we want to isolate more.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But sometimes, again, just acknowledging we don't know what goes on in people's lives outside of work or even up here.
Right.
And so having that compassion, you know, more so, and just knowing that people are, I think, doing the best that they can with what's going on.
Right. So just be kind. Lead with that kindness. Lead with that positive intent. And like, yeah, it's hard to do sometimes because you think you know it all.
Right.
Again, when I say you, I mean I.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's a really powerful move to lean into that vulnerability, I think.
It is.
Because it just makes other people feel, oh, okay.
Right.
Oh, you feel that way too?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember I heard a story once where someone was like, Tony was like really successful. I looked up to them, and you know, you saw this person be like, wow, they really made it. And they must have it all together. And they were like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm figuring this out as I go.
Yeah.
And that was like the most freeing thing ever. Cause I was like, well, that's how I feel all the time. It's like as a parent, as you know, in my job and in whatever I'm doing. And if I think probably most people feel that way. Like, who really has it all together?
Yeah. And if you do, then you're stagnant. You're not learning.
Good point.
You know
good
what
point.
I mean? You're not taking
these
positive risks and being vulnerable.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
My gosh. So how can people find you?
How can you find? I'm really tech savvy. Call myself out there. So, I mean, you can email me. I'm on LinkedIn. My email is leah@leahmarone.com. I mean, yeah, I don't know. And if people contact you, you can give them my info.
Totally.
But I'm more than happy. I'm launching my new website. I'm not there yet, so I'm looking
at
other
ways. It's like building a house, by the way.
Which, again, not my strong
suit. Who knew a website would be so hard? They're everywhere, and yet everyone is a freaking act of valor to get it published.
But I mean, please feel free to contact me with anything or questions, and I'm more than happy to help out in any way I can. And I really, really enjoy, I love the, you know, my practice and the kind of the micro level of it, but I'm really enjoying too kind of the macro piece of it and helping people. And
well, it's such a big thing.
Piece.
I mean, we spend so much of our time at work. We spend, you know, the majority of our waking hours are spent at work.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of dichotomy or these divisions that we've sort of allowed to be placed in between our lives,
yeah,
or placed over our lives, I don't really know when all this started, but like, when did work-life balance, when did that term come up? What a weird term,
I know,
by the way.
I don't even know when that came up.
It's a very weird term,
yeah.
Because I don't know, like, if I have an issue with a family issue, I don't know how, like, leaving that in the car and grabbing my briefcase and coming into work.
It's
like,
hard to
it's
transition.
With me.
It's with,
like,
you. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and then if you compartmentalize it, you end up just really burying it or something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing. So my point is, It's got to be really fulfilling to be able to, like, do your work on this setting where you can really have a massive impact and be a, obviously, on when you're in your practice with an individual, you're making those sort of micro fixes, but to be able to do some things that can cascade across a workforce, or to plant a seed that can start to influence how people feel in at their work that they then can bring home, right? Like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Getting that cycle going and breaking those kind of walls down, it's a really cool thing. So if an organization wanted to get in touch with you for that, what would that look like? Like, what kind of things would you do there? You would come in, just talk to a small group? Would you do like a course?
Sure. So I've done just with some, you know, companies here in Charlotte so far. I will do some seminars. I went into one at Red Ventures actually. I did kind of some stress management, anxiety management, kind of understanding what the symptoms are and, you know, just some basics there, but then kind of mindfulness practices and being more proactive rather than reactive with her stress.
Okay.
And then I've done just some workshops on effective communication and kind of breaking that down and just kind of the psychology behind how we work, how we decode, the importance of that energy exchange, you know, kind of
okay.
the basics of that, and mindfulness techniques interwoven. But I think it's coming from that psychological piece and kind of really honing in on why are we functioning this way? How
right.
is this affecting us? And let's put in some tools and let's, you know, start integrating some things that you can see progression with.
Right.
So it could be seminars, it could be one-on-one type consulting type things, it could be, I'm pretty flexible, and I like people who are creative with it.
Yeah, because there's really so much to do in this area, and it's kind of encouraging that, like, people are kind of waking up to this mindfulness term, because it's so,
yeah.
Again, we have to fix this balance.
It's our superpower that we're not even using.
It is.
So
it really is.
Let's use it.
Yeah, let's use it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
No, thanks.
Great.
This was fun.
This was a lot of fun.
All right.